I'm Lawrence Francis, host of Interpreting Wine, the place to learn from thought leaders in the world of wine and marketing, welcoming you to the 2022 Wine Communication Series. Across these six episodes, I'll be exploring modern wine communication and marketing in the company of some of the world's leading wine podcasters, traveling virtually from Australia and New Zealand to North America via China, with the influence of podcasting and social audio forecast to grow yet again in 2022. Get ahead of the curve with this special series to be released every fortnight between January and March 2022. If you haven't already subscribed wherever you're listening, then sign up today so you don't miss an episode. We close out the series today in the company of Jermaine Stone of the original Wine and Hip Hop podcast. Bronx native Jermaine spent his life entrenched in hip-hop, but found an interest in fine wine while packing boxes in the shipping department for Zaki's Wine Auction, later creating their global logistics presence while honing his skills as an auctioneer. In 2013, he became one of the founding directors and auctioneers for the auction department of LA retail giant Wally's. And throughout his 17-year wine career, Jermaine has worked with various clients across all facets of the wine industry, developing skills in business operations, marketing, brand partnerships, and content creation. Today, Jermaine is head of Crew Love Selections, a New York-based creative agency dedicated to blending his knowledge of wine and hip-hop culture. Enjoy.
My name is Jermaine Showtime Stone, a.k.a. the Wolf of Wine. I have a bunch more a.k.a.s, but I'll save you some time there. But I was born and raised in the Bronx, New York. I was submerged in hip hop. You know, hip hop was born in the Bronx, and it was just so much a part of my life during that time. You know, everything that rappers talked about embodied my surroundings, you know, everywhere from struggling and not growing up poor and having that relation to also the aspirations that a lot of hip hop artists talked about. So, you know, hip hop was really inspirational for me just growing up, especially coming from the Bronx. And so it was always a part of my DNA, you know. I'll connect you to where hip hop plays in later. But I grew up thinking that I was going to be a rapper. You know, I was that kid in high school battling in the hallways. I was on the radio all the time and on TV and different things. Mm-hmm. So all of my friends assumed that that was the route that I was going to go. But I eventually leaned away from that, just more so because professionally I found that it wasn't really something I wanted to do. The music business isn't something that I enjoyed at that time. But I was always a guy that was forward thinking and knew that if rap didn't work out, I needed to have a backup. So I was in school and working on a business degree. During that time, to help pay for college, I took a job at what I thought was a wine store. And it was actually a job at a wine storage facility that was a fulfillment center for a wine store. And they were also the fulfillment center for their wine auction house. So my first job in wine was actually working at a wine auction house in the packing and shipping department. So once an auction closed, you get a list of buyers that receive everything. It was my job to check all those orders, pack them up for UPS and or whomever's picking them up and get them out the door. So that was my first job in wine. And because of that, I had to understand how to read a wine label, so much comes with that. So now I say all that to say, like, think about that kid that's growing up in the Bronx. You know, all I saw was the Bronx and what was around me, to now learn about these different areas of the world that I did not even know existed, you know, and this is, 2004. So young dude, I'm now interested in wine, not necessarily as a beverage per se, but I was very interested in the wine culture and what it was opening me up to. You know, at that time, I was just like, look, being a part of wine, you have to become a part of the rest of the world. You're learning about these different mm-hmm. areas in France, Germany, even areas in New York State that you didn't know existed,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And learning so much. So, and the people were really interested, the food culture, they were all so different from what I experienced. Like, to be honest with you, it felt like I was like watching a TV show, you know, I felt like me sitting in this auction office was like being in an episode of Seinfeld. Yeah, that was really what it felt like, because I was never raised around these types mm-hmm. of people. So I end up moving on from after I graduate, I got a job in the wine auction office as the client service associate. That meant mm-hmm. I was the guy that was processing any orders after the sale. But because you were a client service guy, you also managed the incoming sales. So the way that people purchased wine at auction was through bids and showing up at the auction. So they would send in absentee bids, or they would send their max bid in advance, and I would be one of the people that would need to be behind the scenes processing that and facilitating all the extra administrative stuff for an auction. So that was how I got into the wine auction business. So I came from dealing with the product from a very fundamental place, but then starting to understand the administrative side of the business. And that was a very key point in my career, something that I always hung on to, which was, you know, mixing intelligence with working hard, you know, and that's what carried me. So it started out in client service at Zaki's Wine Auction, an amazing employer. I actually wanted to leave. I was mm-hmm. there at the company about 9 months in. And I was going to leave. I was going to move to North Carolina. I was going through some shit with my family. I'm sorry. I don't know if I could curse on this.
Yeah, But, so, you have now.
You know, we just broke the third wall. We lost a sponsor just that quick. I was going through some stuff with my family at the time, and I wanted to move out of state, start fresh. You know, I didn't think that I could afford to purchase a house in New York. So I'm like, I'm moving to Charlotte. When I went back to Zaki's and turned in my 2 weeks resignation, they didn't even accept it. They were just like, yo, look, let's figure it out. And they straight up made me at that time at 21 years old, they like made me a deal I couldn't refuse, you know, and told me that they were going to teach me things about wine and show me things. And they absolutely fulfilled every one of those promises. So I'm very thankful to all those people there, Don, Zachariah, Jeff, everyone. Great people to work with. After Zaki's, I started at, so I moved on up in the business, mm-hmm. in the logistics side. Also from logistics, because I did have that background in bidding, I was also very instrumental in the bid department and ended up auctioneering, you know? So aside from managing business operations and logistics, I then started auctioneering and transitioned over to Wally's, who's a retailer in LA, and at the time created a wine auction house. So there I became one of the founding directors. And, you know, it was a completely new experience because I was still doing a lot of the same functions in the wine auction industry, but it was coming from a much more entrepreneurial perspective because we were at ground zero. Like day one was at the CEO's porch because we didn't have an office yet, you know, and Jermaine, job one, find us an office and warehouse. Like it was, I came in at that level. So, you know, it was just great. It taught me a lot in just building a business. And, you know, understanding how to utilize the connections that you've worked years to develop, and also learning some new skills. So following Wally's, You know, I then started my own thing. I began consulting on my own because I really wanted to. I wanted to reach a different audience. You know, Wally's downsized the auction department, moved everything to operate out of Los Angeles, and it was like one person working in auctions. So there, I now had to find a new situation. I couldn't move to Los Angeles, so I simply started consulting. You know, my mom at the time was sick with stage 4 cancer, so I needed to have something flexible so that I could be there for her. And, you know, it that was a very, very – that transition from Wally's to entrepreneurship was a very, very, very difficult part of my life, you know. And it really drove my passion for what we're doing because of what I was dealing with on a personal level. I put a lot into my work, you know, that was the distraction from the tough stuff I was dealing with. So that's why a lot of those early shows are so great, you know? But fast forward, I now, wanted to begin to consult, but consulting for wine auction clients can be very expensive, you know, because, marketing yourself, how do you market to like multi-million dollar clients? Like you have to be where they are. So yeah, you're eating at those restaurants, you're drinking what they drink. Now this is independent Jermaine also helping to take care of his sick mom. So that can't work. Now how do I stay in front of my clients' timeline? I still want to do the same things. Being in the industry, I know how much these clients love hip hop, and I know that I'm hip hop. I also know that I have a ton of hip hop friends that love and enjoy wine and have questions and curiosity, but also have the disposable income to be able to buy great wine. They just don't know enough about it. So, you know, how do I bring those worlds together? Through media. You know, I'm great on stage as an auctioneer and in my past as a hip hop artist. You know, let me get in front of the mic and start this podcast so that way I can stay in front of my clients' timelines. You know, let me bring the people that they're interested in so they want and they already know and love me. So let me keep giving them a reason to come back. So that was why I started Wine and Hip Hop Podcast. Now, it didn't start out as Wine and Hip Hop Podcast. it started out as a show called Taste the World with my friend Julia Gilbert. Shout out to Julia. But Taste the World, you know, we did pretty much what we do on Wine and Hip Hop, where we brought two different worlds together, like one from popular culture, one from wine culture, and we sat down and had one conversation. Now, it was a cool show, but it got weird and a little awkward because you're bringing a hip hop. Well, at the time it was all hip hop because I'm so hip hop, right? I kept bringing more hip hop people to the table, and we bring these wine people to the table. It worked. It was fine, but it started out kind of like an awkward dinner party, you know, and you're like the only one that knows both of these people. Yeah. So it's just, you know, and it was a fun show. We had a lot of dope guests, but it didn't meet the potential that I knew that it had. So I retooled the show and I thought about it. I'm like, okay, all we really talk about is hip hop and wine. So we should call it Wine and Hip Hop. Like you got to market it, right? Like you got to let people know what you're about straight up. Then I like looked, I'm like, yo, I own this web domain. I can own this web domain for $5. How is this not? I'm like, yo, wait, no. Somebody must have really thought about this before.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, like, I guess, you know, people didn't really think about how connected the two worlds were. So, you know, the deeper I got into that, the more ideas I had for different types of media and different shows. But my main focus was still wine consulting. I was still, you know, managing billionaire client sellers at that time when I was starting the podcast in 2016. But that world can be very stressful, you know, and not to say I'm not built for the stress, like what I'm doing now is stressful, but to me, this is a lot more fulfilling. You know, I'm not just, you know, helping rich dudes out. I feel like I'm spreading the word about wine and helping people to open their minds to different cultures on both sides, on both wine mm-hmm. and hip hop, mm-hmm. just by showing what it is we do. So the podcast started as just my way to stay in front of my clients' timelines. And in that time, I understood that I always wanted to grow that client base, you know, for people that grew up the way that I did, had the disposable income and enjoyed nicer things, but just didn't have the reverence for it. So wine and hip hop was created to develop that reverence. And that's why it was always about community. That's why all of our media was always designed to have a live component that can be mixed into it. That's where we got started. And, you know, from having a podcast, then, you know, you're a media company. So you have to now do media functions. You go after sponsors and advertisers. But that fell so well into what I was already doing in consulting, because I was consulting for so many different types of clients. One of the benefits of working in the wine auction industry is you basically buy and sell wine from so many different types of customers, from, you know, distributors, direct, from wineries. Sometimes it's from collectors, sometimes from retailers, restaurants, on the buy and sell side. Now, as a person that is a business person for a wine auction house, it's my job to understand my clients' needs, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how I can be the best person for them. I have to know their business in and out. So once you know that, now after auction, I can go out consulting, because I already know so much about how restaurants work. I already know so much about how import works, transportation, so on and so forth. All these small nuanced things, I'm able to jump in and help, you know. But that's the long version of
this is it. No, this is amazing. This is, again, I've listened to some of your episodes, and I know that you tell people the long version is what podcast is all about, and I love that, and I still feel as though there's loads to get into and sort of dive into, and I love that we've gotten to hear all of those experiences side by side, and it just more of an observation, really. I mean, mm-hmm. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about was actually your choice of guests, really, because I would say that the thing that's really stood out for me from all of the guests I've heard, and even more so just the tone of the conversation, has always been that entrepreneurial spirit. So right. So I think it's you know, it's no surprise to me, really, to hear about your experiences and that was really an important part of your development into the wine world, wasn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, that specifically is one of the big things that that blends wine and hip hop, is that entrepreneurial spirit, you know, that hustler spirit. You have mm-hmm. to hustle. Everybody in the wine industry is a hustler. And, you know, the thing that I realized in wine is, like, seeing different cultures hustle is very interesting, because we all have the same mindset, same goal, you know, but there's a certain aggressiveness in deal making. And I saw so much of that in wine auctions, but in negotiation and understanding how to connect and vibe with different types of people. Mm-hmm. That's so much of that stuff is what I learned operating in the Bronx growing up, you know, but it was helpful for me in my wine career. So it's really cool.
Yeah, unbelievable. And, you know, he's had quite a few shout outs on my podcast already, but I'll give another shout out to Gary Vaynerchuk, because I know he's from New York, and, you know, he's, you know, one of the biggest hustlers out there. But he was very instrumental in me, you know, having the confidence to start interpreting wine. I still remember listening to his content back in 2017, and he was saying, this is the time. You got to start a podcast. You got to start a podcast, because it's getting ready to kind of really blow up. And it sounds as though you said 2016, you were really on a similar kind of journey.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. And this is just kind of something that's just always been in my heart, you know, since 94. I remember 1994 in my hallway of my building, my friends and I, we would make like little radio shows. So we heard Stretch and Barbito. That's this epic DJ group. They had this like radio station. It was hidden in between these two radio. It was a weird thing. Like you could only find it sometimes, but it sounded like podcast sound now. Like, you know, when you listen to a radio show, it sounds highly produced and but these guys were just like shooting the shit and playing like cool music. So we recreated that like on dub cassettes. Like we actually had the two tape deck thing. We would play a song, you know, insert the songs, and then we would do our radio thing. That was 94. In 2009, I actually started an internet radio show. That was like at that time they were using like this thing called Live 365. All my old school internet radio people know what that is. But I had a show called Stogel. And Stogel is an acronym for Stereotypically Thugged Out Genius on the Low. And that was the idea behind the show, was just trying to show people like, look, stereotypically, yeah, I might look thugged out, but there's this genius quality to me that you don't know. And I had a bunch of different people on the show. Now, mind you, the show didn't go very far. We recorded about two episodes. Mm-hmm. One of the guys on the show actively sold crack, you know, but I wanted to show people, just because that's what his job is, doesn't mean that he doesn't care about like healthcare. You know, so like how does he approach that sort of thing? So we wanted to have like real people that were stereotypically looked at as thugs talk about everyday life. And, you know, it was my attempt at helping people to see one another, see these people as like, you know, your community member. And that's what I feel like I'm doing with Wine and Hip Hop, but without the friend that sells crack on the show. Yeah.
This is it. It sounds as though you were ahead of your time.
But yeah, man, this has definitely been something that been in my heart for a long time.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And I guess, and I think, you know, I have a broad variety of people that listen in, and you know, most often in the wine trade and wine students, and I think, you know, something that, you know, it would be interesting to hear a little bit more about, really, you know, would it be, I guess, yeah, I'm sure you picked up a lot around, you know, being around wine, as you say, doing the fulfillment, doing the preparing for the auctions, and and as you say, you know, dealing with the clients. That to me, you know, suggests a very connected state of mind around wine. But maybe, yeah, take us back into perhaps some of those, you know, earlier journeys. You know, I've always said that there's always somebody that kind of takes you under their wing and kind of will open those bottles for you, because, you know, at the end of the day, wine is not a spectator sport. You know, you actually have to taste and you have to be able to compare. And I'm wondering if, you know, it's really interesting to me that it doesn't sound as though you've worked in a hospitality setting where you kind of maybe could get that access, which I know a lot of people do kind of coming up. So, yeah, maybe talk to some of those sort of more formative experiences as you were, getting really immersed into the world of what sounds like, you know, fine wine and, quite sort of high-end wines, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I did totally brush past like the whole wine auction thing. But no, there was some very deep years. There was, and it's funny you also mentioned, like, yeah, there is usually that one person. Mm. And for everybody that's listening, whether you're on the side where you should be teaching people or you're on the side where you should be looking for a mentor, mentorship in wine is critical. 100%. It won't happen without it. And shout out to my mentor and still my good friend and brother, and now my business partner, Michael Jessen. He at the time was the auction director at Zacky's. He was the one that was like, yo, look, no, you can't leave. We're gonna, you know, make sure you learn things. And he, just exactly like you said, he took me under his wing. Literally, he put me under his arm and took me to the New York Wine Experience from Wine Spectator back in, I want to say that was 2005. Mm-hmm. And that was a big part of, you know, holy shit, this is dope. You know, starting to taste the same varietal from different areas and understand that it tastes different. You know, but also seeing that big show, you know, seeing the interest and the community building, like that was just so dope for me. Like the experiencing different cultures was a big part of what interested me in wine because of the limited experience that I had growing up. Like I tell my friend Michael all the time, like I didn't even have any white friends before I got into wine. Not just like I knew white people, like, but I didn't have like a friend that I could call and say, hey, let's go to dinner. Like it just wasn't in my circle because of my surroundings. And wine was what opened that up for me. And I could tell in the same regard, you know, Michael, for example, he's from Indiana. He didn't know anybody like me in the past. So there was a, it was this big cultural exchange that was happening. But I had a very backwards wine education because I do come from the auction world. Mm-hmm. I started out drinking all the high end stuff first, you know, like the taster bottles that you get when you receive. So a consignment is a bunch of items that you receive from a person that wants you to sell their wine. So every item that you see that an auction house sells is taken on consignment. So when you receive a consignment, you have to check the integrity of the collection by tasting bottles that are representative of the collection that was stored and or purchased in around the same time and stored in the same manner. Generally, like, you know, one bottle, I think it's like, they usually mention a percentage of what the value for the consignment is for what you have to taste. That'll always be worked out specifically with every client. But long story short, you get to taste some pretty good shit. Yeah. <You know? laughs> So that's it. And you know that. And then also at the auctions, we'll also open bottles that are representative of the consignments to get people excited about them. Because that's the thing, like, you know, you may not know what you're buying. Like, I know this auction house, but I don't know Joe Schmo that he got these bottles from. And that is, that's the auction house's value, being that standard for quality and making sure that you are only working with the best suppliers and, you know, working with people that are, that have that respect for wine. Amazing. But yeah, that's where a lot of that foundation came from.
And who would get to do the tasting then? Is it almost, you know, I'm thinking that again, the kind of hospitality analogy, it's like, you know, front of house that typically gets to kind of taste wine. And if people, you know, are bringing wine into a restaurant, it's obviously the sommelier who'll get to taste that. Was it the same there, or were people who were sort of involved in the logistics and the fulfillment, were they also getting to taste wine as well?
Yeah, well, so at that time, I was already, I was like the logistics manager. Mm-hmm. So I was like in the office where a lot of that stuff would be opening up. But I will say this, I was very, very fortunate that both, and I've only had like two, I've worked with two big companies. I've consulted for almost every wine auction house, but I've worked with two big companies in my career, Wally's and Zacky's. And both of those companies were very, very adamant about pushing wine culture, you know? So anybody that wanted to learn, learned. If you halfway wanted to learn, yo, come on, we're tasting this at this time. Yeah, oh, we're opening up this Lafitte, 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And we would, that was a part of the culture. Mm-hmm. And if you weren't down with that, then you were kind of corny. You know, you did. And so that was the thing. No, I was very fortunate in that way that it was in the culture that was pushed.
I love it. Yeah, I got to say that's huge though, because, you know, I won't name any names, but, you know, I've been around, you know, other cultures where basically there was a divide. You know, it's like the people who are packing the boxes, to them, it's just a bottle. It's just a name on a sheet, basically. and it's more the people who are customer facing and, you know, are doing the sales. They're the ones that are kind of into the wine and, you know, are getting kind of excited. But I think it's missing an opportunity, really, isn't it? Because it's like, yeah. You know, you can, as it sounds like happened in your situation, you know, you really got pulled through that, and it was like, it was just what everybody did, and it maybe is another one of those sort of powers of wine to just sort of break down the barriers, you know, bring everybody and have everybody on the same level, drinking from the same cup and trying the same wine and giving their opinions together.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, to your point, I also think that was kind of one of the things that made me special in a lot of the areas that I went to, is because I related so well with both sides. Mm-hmm. So I was always like a glue to bring everyone together. Mm-hmm. You know, like by the end of it, by my last couple of days at Zachy's, like the warehouse and office crew would be playing basketball in the park on break. You know, it was just, yeah. It all became one thing. And, you know, I was just lucky to be in some great spots, man, with good people.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's super interesting. And, you know, I love that theme that's, I feel, is, you know, running through everything that you've said, you know, in terms of bringing those different cultures together. And yeah, maybe as we've sort of taken a slight step back from the specifics of the podcast and, you know, kind of your day to day, I think, you know, one thing I did want to ask you about, and you've you know, alluded to it on an entrepreneurial level, but it is really, yeah, you know, what are the things that you think that really, you know, wine can learn from hip hop? You know, I think that, you know, it's often, and I think you often put it together as that kind of fusion and those things coming across. But are there things that you see hip hop doing well and you've seen it doing well for years that wine just isn't even aware of and maybe, you know, for its own good could actually learn something from?
You know, that's a very interesting question. And I usually ask like the reverse of that on my podcast. This is so funny. So the table has turned, man. I gotta but no, you know, I will say this. I think that wine and hip hop are very similar in the fact that people think there's a way that it should be, right? Like, you have people that might say that, let's see, you got natural wine haters, right? You got your natural wine haters. You got your natural wine lovers. You got your people that like natural wine and just hate Old World just simply because people are hating on them, right? So there's this generation gap in styles. But at the end of the day, it's all art. And I think that hip hop for a long time, especially New York hip hop, was stuck in that this is the way that it's supposed to be. This is real hip hop. Just the same way you hear, oh, this is real wine. Like, you know, they're not drinking out of the right glasses. It's all of this stuff these are things that I think hold wine back and have held hip hop back in many ways. I think has held New York hip hop back specifically a lot because of that, like, judgmental capability that they've had, you know. I think that, and wine has done a little bit of this, but they could probably lean into this a bit more. And I've seen hip hop lean into this a lot more, which is why I'm answering this way. Embrace the youth, embrace change. Like, you really have to embrace it, not just deal with it, not just tolerate it, embrace it. You know, you see so many older artists that are bringing younger artists under their wing. This is what you need to do. This is what the wine community should do. There's also a lot more, I think, like mashups that happen, you know, across genres and things like that. I'd love to see some more like winemaker mashups. Like, everything is, you know, lineage in wine. Maybe, you know, I want to see this guy from this farm go work with some grapes more. You know, so I'd like to see some more blending come together. Those are the things I think that that wine can take from hip hop specifically, but mostly embrace the future, push the future. But the gatekeepers, the fine wine community, like the people that are those gatekeepers, these are the people that have to embrace that change and push that change.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, I've seen some of that happening. I would say in wine. I mean, I actually earlier this year I did a series on Washington State wine, which was really fascinating for me. You know, it's obviously the second largest wine region in the States, but you know, mainly you know through one of the guests, Chateau Saint Michel, looking at you know them working with those producers who are like the iconic ones. So you know, when it came to a Riesling project, they looked to Dr. Lucen and they formed a joint partnership and were sort of working together. And I know that they did that with Rhone producers and you know, that to me I think is just you know, is a really
epic,
fascinating way to do it, really, because you know, why can't you have the best of both worlds? You know, you've got I guess more accessible prices for land and you know, incredible growing conditions that I've heard about in Washington State, but then you've also got the sort of 100 years of experience in Germany or in the Rhone. Bring them
exactly
together.
I want to see like a Kanye West of wine, like with like all the different, you know, winemakers up in the vineyards. You know? So I need to see that happening. Like make that, bring the Donda of wine together.
Just, yeah. Have a, and do you think, I mean, have you seen that in American wine? I mean, I'm asking you about American wine, but I think that you also, I've heard you talk a lot about you know, French wine and Burgundy, and yeah, do you kind of, yeah, where do you see that happening? I mean, have you seen that in other states of the US, you know, that kind of collaboration?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've found that a lot of winemakers in California really bring on like a more Burgundian style in a lot of the things that they're just a lot of the approach out there. It feels like now, you know, people are having children and they're moving across the world and now they're getting into these different communities. But I have seen a lot of that. I feel like coming out of California, just being inspired by more international and old world things.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I love it, and I think something that maybe, yeah, maybe is on a similar line. You know, I listened recently to your episode with Robert Bohr, which I absolutely loved. And he brought up, you know, I think a really interesting time or an interesting point around the albums that we think are the best are the ones where we have the most time to listen to them. And
right.
And that really stood out to me because it's kind of the same. It's like, you know, I will, you know, there was a time when I, you know, really got into hip hop and really kind of, you know, was doing my exploration and, you know, happened across like the Roots and, you know, the whole sort of, you know, within a standard deviation of the Roots, you know, like Common and Talib Kweli and all of these incredible artists. Yeah. And that was my college days. You know, those were the sort of the carefree times. And, you know, those were the times when, I had the time to research it and the internet was this new thing. And it really felt like you were being a bit of a pioneer. And, I love that analogy, and I guess first of all, it sounded as though you could definitely relate to that when he came through on your show. And I'm wondering, is there something similar like that for you in the wine world?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's funny you mention that. So the development of my palate in wine has been interesting. You know, although I was working in auction and, you know, drinking at that time, like Bordeaux was huge, you know, so this is early, like this is 04, 05, 06. big Bordeaux years, a lot of big Bordeaux sales happening. So that was a lot of what was being pumped to me. I feel like more towards like 2010 and 11, Burgundy started to come into play. Well, not that it wasn't always, but it was much more of the conversation that I was a part of. Now, during that time, drinking all that great shit, I was at home drinking, like, you know, Hennessy with my friends, of course. But then when I go on dates, because I'm in wine, like, you know, there is this expectation. So I'd have like Moscato, and that was what I was drinking just because it was wine. At the time, I was not getting the flavor. It wasn't really, it wasn't coming across to me at that time. And so, but, you know, you drink enough bottles of Moscato and you're going to work drinking Lafite, Moscato starts to taste like shit. So you evolve, like, all right, let me just, you start to find different versions of that. And, you know, then I settled on Riesling. I'm like, okay, wow, I'm finding some really dope Rieslings. And then the fact that there were like all these different levels of sweetness of Riesling is like, oh shit, this is one varietal, but it tastes like this. And so that also, that kind of started me down a little bit of a rabbit hole. But because of that, I couldn't specifically stick to Riesling because it was so dynamic. Then I ended up getting into Shiraz because there was this bar that was near me, and I'm like, let me just shot down some reds. But there was that like little bit of sweetness on the Shiraz and spiciness. So it was interesting to me. Like, and that was when I started to be interested in the flavors in wine. Like, I started to pick up little things. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Now, from Shiraz to, I was never like a big Cabernet Sauvignon guy. But from Shiraz, it went to Pinot Noir. And, you know, from there, I just started bouncing around. But my palate went exactly like that, just by, you know, begin. That's how you, like, when you start to pick up nuance in things, that's when you, I feel like wine isn't specifically about a taste. It's about realizing all the different nuances in the taste. Not to say like, oh, this is the best thing. Kool-Aid tastes great, you know, but there's no, there's not much going on there. There's not much nuance. There's nothing there. It's just sugar.
You take a sip, you want another sip, you know, and then you want another bottle. Yeah.
That's just it. Wine, with wine, there are so many different elements. And when I started drinking Shiraz was when I started to realize that. And I say all that to say that varietal always has a special place in my heart, to where now we're revisiting that with one of the projects that we're working on. We are using like Syrah with an episode of a show we recently did. So I'm back in that place.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And yeah, it's just, I think as well, yeah, it's such a big world. You know, I think both are, you know, both wine and hip hop are such big worlds. And yeah, and maybe, you know, for our own, to balance it with the hip hop as well. And with any new music, it's like, you know, you need people, I think, to sort of say to you, listen to this, you know, play, give this a play. Otherwise you'll get stuck in your own loop, and you'll be, you know, listening to the same stuff, you know, exactly. Over and over again. And you just need that nudge. And I think sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, that's what I was going to say. Like, that's the importance of going to wine tastings, right? Like, because if you don't listen to the radio, how are you going to know what new music is out there? You know, you can't you can't just walk into a record store and just buy whatever they hand you. You know, you have to like experience different things, go to wine tastings, network, and see what other people are into. Like, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that to bring it back to your show, really, I think that's one of the things that I love about the internet, you know. And just, you know, if I'm looking for new music, I know that there are certain channels on YouTube that I can go in and tune into, and I trust their ear, you know. It's almost like trusting their palate. I know
exactly.
I know that, okay, if they're liking that album, then, and they're giving it a good rating, or if they got an interesting take on it, then I think I'm gonna sort of enjoy that myself.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm really a big fan of you know, like dating a conversation. You know, it's like, right, you know, it's December 2021, and you know, if we speak in a year's time, it'll be completely different. But you know, kind of as you sit here and you know, we're kind of approaching the end of the year, give us a sense of what the podcast and obviously your wider consulting wider consulting business, what does that sort of look like for you, and maybe starting through a sort of a, you know, a day to day or a week in the life of Jermaine as it stands at the moment.
At the moment, wow, yeah, man. Now, yo, that changes like at the drop of a hat. Let's see, day to day, you know, wake up, family time. I got a 3-year-old and a wife who is, I have basically 2 3-year-olds that I got to get together and get out.
Twins.
But, exactly. 2 princesses. But no, man, you know, definitely I start the morning with family. I'm up extremely early. So let me back that up. I start with workout and then, family. But yeah, getting into the day, it's, a lot of, content creation recently, has been the focus of so many things. I spend a lot of time doing that. We spend a lot of time, writing. We spend a lot of time putting together treatments and planning different shows. But, you know, I'm also very hands-on in every aspect of our business. So, you know, scoring new partnerships, seeking out new partnerships, a lot of times that stuff comes through me because I'm like the face of my company, yeah, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
We do have amazing, amazing people working with us. Shout out to Rebecca Lawrence. I love you. Shout out to Jerome Fenton. I love you. Jay Kwa, my man. We have great people working with us, but so many people come to me for things. It always has to be like broken down a little bit before I'm able to pass it off. Mm-hmm. But I'm hands-on editing, writing, I'm shooting. That's what most of my days consist of. Outside of that, meetings and making playlists. Like I do, I gotta say, man, I have my dream job, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes that dream is a nightmare, but it is a dream nonetheless. You know, yeah. I like make playlists for a living. I'll do that. Cool. You know, like, all right, today I have to think of some wine and hip hop pairings for this presentation that we're doing on Good Day New York. All right. So I'm going to spend the day listening to music and reading notes on this wine and drinking the wine. Those are the sorts of things that I have to do over the course of the day. Now, there's problems with everything, right? And yes, making a playlist and drinking wine sounds like fun. But, you know, I made a playlist for a restaurant, One White Street. Shout out to my man, Dustin Wilson. Did a playlist for them and did three playlists for 3 shifts, 12 hours at a time, right? So I got to give up 3 12-hour playlists that are specifically curated and have to flow perfectly with the different hours of the day that playlist is going to be on. So that is work. Like, I love music. I listen to music all day, every day. After I completed that project, I don't think I listened to music for like a month. it was too much. But yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, yeah. It's it's not easy, you know. It's like anybody who's, you know, been chucked on to DJ and everyone stops dancing.
Exactly. And it's like you really have to think through, especially like with the wine and hip hop pairings. You know, I'll do one of the, over the past year, I was probably on the news like 6 times for different Good Day shows where I do wine and hip hop pairings. I have to like really learn about these wines that I may or may not know about and find a connection for them with a specific song that I can't bullshit through. Like, I have to feel it and know it. So that takes time of studying and, you know, contemplation. Like, it really is difficult. There was one time I had to come up with like 50 pairings 1 month, you know, and it's not as easy as it may seem sometimes, but it is fun.
Yeah. And it's, I'm sure it's also just like getting just that right, you know, being a perfectionist and getting the right pairing. It's like, is it that song or is it that, you know, they might be from a similar year or even the same artist, but it's like, I need that remix there. You know, it's got to be that exact one.
Exactly. No. And you know, you have to sell it. You have to feel it. If you are not excited about that pairing, no one will be, you know? So that's, it all comes down to like, do I enjoy this or not? But you know, you're selling yourself. So the best it's not that hard to be yourself.
Yeah.
That's all you gotta do.
Yeah. No, I love it. And I think it's, you know, it's interesting hearing you saying about the opportunities kind of coming to you know, you being the face of the business, because I think, you know, that's one of the most interesting things, you know, just from the title of the podcast out, you know, wine and hip hop. It's that's, you know, and you had the domain and you had everything there that you needed, but that is your flagpole, isn't it? That is your part, I guess, of, you know, of people's mental real estate. You know, they're always gonna make those connections, and you I think are always gonna come front of mind when they're making those connections, because you've claimed it. You know, you've said, this is me. You've stood in that intersection, and you've created content around it.
Yeah, I really hope that people do, you know, look at me that way. Definitely, like, yo, it's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, money that went into this. But I also feel like, you know, this has been my entire life, like literally since birth. I'm, you know, I was born in 1984 in the Bronx, New York. Like, this is like Google that place during that time, you know, and I was not one of those people that was just inside my house, like looking outside from my window. I was in the streets for real, you know, you know, I had stuff that I'd lived through before. Like, if I went through my life before wine, it's a whole thing on its own. So, you know, as far as all the hip hop stuff, I feel like I embody the hip hop lifestyle in a lot of ways. It musically as well as just culturally. But then in the wine game, the things that I've seen, the people I've been around, the wines I've consumed, you know, I feel like I've really had a chance to also take that culture in such a unique way, where like, there are very few people that have been in both of the rooms that I've been in, you know, and because of that, I felt like it was my duty to be an ambassador for both of those cultures, because I knew how closely related they both were. And so much of it was melding together on its own. You look at guys like Jay-Z and Nas talking about wine, Swiss Beats, E-40, the list goes on. But I just felt like on an executive level and behind the scenes, I felt like I was in a very unique position. And that was really why I moved forward and wanted to bring those worlds together.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think there are quite a few entrepreneurial slash, you know, as closely as you can get, you know, something like Jay-Z with Ace of Spades, and that there are probably more examples, aren't there, of people in hip hop actually having their own wine brands as well.
Yeah. Shout out to 19 Crimes, you know, my peoples. But Snoop Dogg, you know, look at how successful that brand is. I mean, the list just goes on. It's hair.
And do you see that kind of, you know, bringing in new people into drinking wine, then, you know, maybe who are coming from the hip hop side of things, and maybe, you know, haven't had the sort of you know, exposure to wine in the past, and it's kind of opening a door to them and bringing new people into the wine side.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I'd give a lot of credit to the people at 19 Crimes in the way that they are handling that. But and guys like E40, who was a true pioneer in bringing wine into hip hop. But you know, I found that it is so difficult to get my black male friends to drink wine. Like it's always seen as like, all right, it's for women. It's a women's drink. You know, that was how wine was approached in a lot of my circles. So this helps it to get into people's timelines much more. Mm-hmm. Because mind you, it's not like I don't have black male friends that drink wine. It's just I have some that are like, I mean, real. They still in the trap. I'll put it to you that way. they're not so much on that wine train. But seeing guys like Snoop, guys like E40, Jay-Z, you know, it brings it into their circle a lot more. And it's gonna just open the thought to people. And that's all they want. Just a thought. Taste it once. Maybe you might not like this one, but you might like that.
Yeah, the collaboration that kind of surprised me that I saw the other day was Raekwon, and I think the Lambrusco. I was looking for it if we could get it in England, and I still haven't found anybody anywhere that I can buy it over here. But you know, it's very. I thought that was a really interesting collaboration because even that as a wine brand, you know, I think it really, you know, fell out of favor, you know, due to it, maybe a victim of its own success or, you know, quality, but you know, it's had a sort of a rocky past, and it's like, you know, this can be good for both sides, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Like a varietal, like a Lambrusco, you look at that. I mean, Lambrusco was so big in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
you know? And then, but people always look at it as like this, it's a cheap drink or whatever, but there are so many amazing Lambruscos out there that when you make anything with quality, like the Raekwon's wine specifically, like the grapes, there's a very rigid selection process for all the grapes that are going in the bottles, extended maceration period, more richness than a lot of other Lambruscos. Like there's a ton of craftsmanship in the winemaking there. And to see artists managing wine products like that is just amazing because that's what it's all about. We're past that phase of it just being a face on a bottle. There is like true artisanship going into the products that are coming out of the wine and hip hop community.
Yeah, and I think there, and it's almost as though it is that blend and but you know I don't think any of the producers on either side, you know, they don't want to put their name to something because again, you know, we've got the internet, you know, if somebody puts out something cynical and just sticks a face and a name on it for the sake of it, then people will find out, you know, the word will be out there and it lives there on the internet forever. And it's like, you know, you can't get that back once you've kind of lost it, you know, that credibility.
Definitely. No, man, I'm very excited to see where the industry is going with it. There are so many celebrities getting into it. People give the celebrity brands shit, but I'm just like, look, man, you watch commercials. How do you expect to hear about it? You know, what's the difference between this celebrity and someone else? As long as they're coming to it from a genuine place of love, you know, look, you want to do the right thing? I'm all for it. Just have a unique idea. We're all selling ideas here.
Yeah. And I think actually, yeah, be present, right? It's, as you say, it's not just sort of telephoning it in. It's like if you're actually, especially present and you actually put some thought into it, then, you know, why not? You know,
exactly.
It's creativity at the end of the day.
Exactly. It really is an art. And that's, you know, to bring it all full circle, like that's where the biggest connection in these two worlds are. It's an art. Wine as an art comes in many, many different expressions. There are genres, there's subgenres, same thing as hip hop. You know, it is an art. And the way that we interpret it as an individuals, that's what defines our experience. So I can't tell you there's a bad bottle of wine or a good bottle of wine. I just have to find a point of relation for you. And that's why I choose hip hop.
Yeah, I love it. And actually, just another, you know, very, very prominent hip hop chef and wine lover, Action Bronson, came to mind, and it just made me think that, you know, if there are people out there that, you know, it's a girl's drink, you know, go and tell Action.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's in Action too. Like he is an embodiment of what wine and hip hop culture is. You know, you don't expect a guy like Action to be as intelligent about not just wine, but food. Like that guy, he could be a Michelin chef, man. Yeah. He's on a different level. But to also be as good as he is in rapping, you know, so
and body slamming as well. Yeah.
He lost a lot of weight too, man. He's doing his thing. He is living the life.
I love
it. Yeah, man.
Yeah, this is it, and I hope that we'll maybe open up some doors for the people who are listening. You know, I'll try to include some of those names and some links for people that want to look a little bit further and to explore some of those. And you know, I'm sure that there's loads that we've missed out, and there's hopefully loads more to come. But I think this has been a really interesting conversation for me because I think it's shown people that there are some really creative and interesting collaborations. And as you say, you know, someone like Action Bronson being, you know, a great example. It's just, you can tell that he's genuinely in love with natural wine, and that he says, you know, I never used to like wine. It was too stuffy, but natural wine was his thing. And he's just really, you know, gone there.
And when you think about the community around natural wine, the natural wine community is different. Like there's a whole entire space there. So it's just cool what the future of wine is bringing. Like, you know, we try to do things, and I found things like our show, for example. We have a show, Tasting Notes from the Streets, where every episode we pair our favorite food from the hood with a different wine from around the world. You know, this is me bringing back that, I'm a hood dude at the end of the day, but wine helped me to see outside of the hood and look towards the rest of the world. To enjoy wine, you have to be a citizen of the world. And, you know, that's how I bring those two worlds together. But I think that the natural wine space fits so well into that, like, Tasting Notes from the Street space. Like that was happening. With Tasting Notes from the Streets, we've done like Cornas, you know, that's the most recent episode. We've done Spate Burgunder and Jamaican beef patties for our first episode. And after each episode, we also have an in-person event where people can try the pairing together. So when we think about like bringing communities together, a lot of that is like me trying to bring that natural wine scene, that energy that they've already created, to bring that to the rest of the wine world. But that whole scene is amazing, man. Gotta say.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. And you're obviously kind of reading my mind, because I did want to guide us back to looking ahead, looking ahead to kind of 2022. I know there's, you know, it's uncertain times all over the world in a lot of ways. Are there projects that you've got on the horizon that you'd be happy to kind of either, you know, talk about and in terms of ones that are close to kind of fruition and close to coming through, or even just, you know, ideas and you know, again, collaborations, creativity that you want to explore more in 2022?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I did mention Tasting Notes from the Streets. That is our second show, apart from Wine and Hip Hop. Mm-hmm. It's available, available on YouTube. But yeah, we pair our favorite foods from the hood with a different wine from around the world. The first episode debuted in August. Late July. The event happened in August. Okay. And the event really, it brings those worlds together that we're talking about. You know, first episode we did Jamaican beef patties and Spaat Burgunder. The second episode we did Etna Bianco and fried fish sandwiches.
Love it.
And the third episode we did chopped cheese and cornas. Now, all of the thing is, like, if you know the hood, you'll know the food. But if you know the wine, and, you know, if you don't know the hood, you won't know the food.
Yeah.
But if you know the wine, you'll know the wine. Like, but if you don't, if you're hood, you might not know that wine. You're not probably going to know Spaat Burgunder or Etna Bianco. So we're going a little bit outside of the day-to-day conversation with this. And in 2022, we're going to really be doubling down on that. The episodes will be happening monthly. Events will be happening monthly as well. You know, we are going through a little spike right now with this new Omarion variant, you know. Omicron.
He's,
I know,
he's
I know
still around.
Omarion still fucking up dance floors. But yeah, you know, it's a little spike. I think we're going to get past that early 2022. You know, we do have the benefit of having dealt with COVID in the past. We now, you know how to roll through it and handle it. I can see us handling it well. So we do intend to do a lot more in-person events. Wine and Hip Hop TV, which is mm-hmm. just the visual version of Wine and Hip Hop Podcast, will now also be coming out monthly. And we will be doing events around that as well. But yeah, I plan to travel a lot more. You know, I found that it's so weird. We have bigger audiences outside of New York than we do in New York.
Okay.
I'm not even sure why. Like, that's some shit I'm dealing with at home. But, you know, shout out to everybody in Cali, Atlanta. I mean, like, all these Italy, like, we have these huge pockets of fans in all these mm-hmm, different mm-hmm. places, Chicago, you know, Oregon. So we plan on hitting all of these different spots. South Carolina, probably be there in March. But yeah, lots of travel and lots more fire with Tasting Notes from the Streets and Wine and Hip Hop TV.
I love it. And in terms of, like, how you know, bring an experience and, you know, continue to grow a community. Is that the way that you see is the kind of, you know, the way that makes most sense for you, actually having those pop-ups, bringing those Tasting Notes from the Streets and bringing those pairings that people have heard about and maybe seen, but having it there in that live environment with you and the team there on site?
Yeah, big time, you know. And aside from that, just on the community building aspect, we also launched our Wine and Hip Hop Club. Mm. Now, you know, people, wine clubs are out there all the time. And I actually think wine clubs are awesome because, you know me, you got to taste different things, try variety. It's the spice of life. But our wine club is a little different because you receive a wine pack of 3 to 6 bottles, depending on what level you choose, every month. It comes with a playlist and paired with the wines. And we also give you access to our online tasting group where everyone that is a part of the club has access and can taste together to discuss the wine and the music. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll go in as the moderator for the discussion. You know, I have a bunch of cool different questions that relate to the wine and the music. But, you know, tasting in that group setting is so important to develop your palate. And that's what we want to offer to the wine and hip hop community. So we're doing that. Aside from that, let's see, Wine Hip Hop Club. We also have a dope new show that's going to be debuting in 2022 called Wine Bars. There I'm bringing in a bunch of other wine professionals. That's the tough part for me. It's like I have all of these ideas, but I can't host every single show. So I'll probably be producing a bunch more shows for some other people. Like, yo, look, if you want to work with The Wolf, holla at me. You know, I'm out here. but I'll probably be producing shows for other people. And this show, Wine Bars, is really cool. I'm working with it's myself and three other wine professionals. We're going to be debating and discussing our favorite wine, our favorite rap lyrics with wine references in them, judged by a different guest every episode. So it'll be a ton of fun, man. 2022 is going to be interesting.
Amazing, amazing. And yeah, I think, you know, also, you know, I do have people from, as I say, from, you know, from different parts of the wine world, sort of, listening in. And what's the best, you know, if a wine region or a wine brand is sort of listening in, what's the sort of best way for them to make initial contact and to kind of learn a bit more about previous work that you've done with those types of brands?
This is the biggest flex in the world right now, Lawrence. Just Google wine and hip hop. Just Google wine and hip hop. Yeah. No, honestly, if you Google wine and hip hop, I'm there. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Like, no, but also all jokes aside, you can go to wineandhiphop.com or also our Instagram at wineandhiphopshow. Or my Instagram, The Real Wolf of Wine. You know, I'm told you can on all of our channels, you can see a lot of the things that we do. I'm very, very proud of the work that we do. And I do feel like we are helping to change people's perspectives on wine and help them to feel more welcomed and excited about wine.
I love it. I love it. And I want to close with a question I don't think you've been asked before, and I could have sort of opened with, explain the nickname, man. Explain the Real Wolf of Wine nickname.
Cool. So you know, this actually comes from my auction days. You know, it's funny, like, the people that I worked with, they'd call me my nickname all the time. They'd call me Show or Showtime because, you know, that was my rap name. So that was what, like, my bosses were calling me. But with regard to problem solving, I was like the Wolf from Pulp Fiction. Because of all of the nightmares that I would clean up everywhere from bidding issues to delivery problems to, you know, I'm in Seattle and I need 500 boxes by tomorrow morning because I'm packing up this cellar and I need them picked up temperature control by that evening. You know, I need a cellar picked up in Paris and I need it to be in Georgia stored, you know, for a month. Like, it needs to happen in 24 hours. Like, I'm the guy that you call. Just like the Wolf from Pulp Fiction. So, you know, and in my heyday, once people understood that I was handling a problem, they're like, oh, all right, it's done. And they wouldn't think about it. So the Wolf of Wine.
Huge thank you to Jermaine for closing this wine communication series. It's been a real honor virtually traveling all around the world of wine, and really happy that we finished in New York and in the hip hop culture, which is something that I definitely have a strong interest with, as you can hear. Do see below for Jermaine and his team's website, wineandhiphop.com, from where you can find all of their social media channels and get in touch. And of course, I would love to have you following along with me on social media, where I'm at Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter, and email hello@interpretingwine.com. All that's left to do is to say a huge thank you to all six guests in this first ever wine communication series.
And if you've enjoyed this as a listener, do feel free to leave this episode, or indeed your favorite episode, an iTunes review at interpretingwine.com/listen. Thank you so much for listening along, and I will see you next time.